We got a Black Hawk down. We got a Black Hawk down.
Can you spell it?
D-J-A-N-G-O. The D is silent.
I'm gonna need you to go ahead and come in tomorrow.
And this is?
Lilu Dallas Multipass.
Boy, it's fuel like fire! So start melting, ladies, because the boy is hotter than hot. He's hot, hot, hot!
All right, welcome again, dear listener. This is the Good Trash Genre Cast. We are so glad to be with you talking about movies. We're going to talk about some trash films today, a movie called Dredd, not to be confused with Judge Dredd, though it is the same character. The 2012 version, not that from the early days, way back when in the 90s. So, we got to introduce ourselves, though, before we do that. The man on my left, if you would, sir.
My name is Dalton Stewart,
and it's all a deep end.
The man to the far right, sir, if you would.
I'm Caleb Masters, and I'm Bach.
Oh, are you?
That's no, Bach. That was a bad Arnold. I like it, though. It was good to have you back. Hey, it's good to have you back, man.
Hey, you're right next to Dalton on the impression
meter. The man between us, if you would, sir.
I am Arthur Gordon, and I am Judge Judy and Executioner.
I am the stunt double for Carl Urban's chin. My name is Dustin Sells.
You wish.
And I am so... I got a large chin.
You know what I should have said, actually?
That means an urban chin.
Earlier this week, somebody told me I look like Adam Scott of Parks and Recreation, which is to say that I look like a much less masculine Carl Urban.
Okay. Yeah, I could buy that.
Some of you buying the reference. Let's get into the show.
We got to talk about a movie called Dredd. Now, this is a analysis show, not a review show. We will give you our quick senses of taste and whatnot, but we're going to do what we always do. We're going to talk about what it means. We're going to unpack it, which means we're going to spoil it. So if you haven't seen the movie, you might want to check it out.
Spoiler.
But if you don't care and you just want to hear what we got to say about the movie, that's fine, too. We're going to have a synopsis for you to kind of help you along, and then we're going to do it. So if we could begin... with the voice of the cinema, Mr. Arthur Gordon, if you would, sir.
In a violent, futuristic city where the police have the authority to act as judge, jury, and executioner, a cop teams with a trainee to take down a gang that deals the reality-altering drug, Slow-Mo.
Our very, very brief reviews, and then let's do some analysis. I begin to my right, Mr. Arthur Gordon, if you would, sir.
First off, let me say, I was so happy to see Big Julius from Remember the Titans, almost as much as I love seeing Gary Pertier on Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, I'm sorry, did you mean Avon Barksdale from The Wire?
That's right, Avon Barksdale.
Now, I love when a movie can do a lot with a little and can play to its strength, and I think the budget here for Dredd is low, $50 million for an action movie of this caliber, it's pretty low budget. But they work around that with very strong craftsmen. I'd say Dredd is well shot, well directed. Well cast, the effects are well done, and I wish I could have seen it in 3D. I believe Dalton did.
I did too.
Okay, and Caleb, regardless of anybody, Dustin, did you?
No.
All right. And I feel that was kind of the consensus from the critics. It was a pretty solid, well-rounded film. However, that being said, this movie is just about 100% blah for me.
Okay.
Looking through the reviews, I found the perfect description of this film, and C.J. Johnson, in his review, calls it an extremely expensive art house action flick for the diehard crowd. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it does a lot of things very right. I'd recommend it to people who like these types of ultraviolent action films, but I just couldn't get invested.
And that was that all the words of...
Not all of it, just the action.
The action.
Art house action film.
Art house, I think that might
so
be...
So are we saying this is in the same realm as Drive?
No!
I think he...
I'll elaborate on that later.
I think when he says art house, he speaks of purely the attention to visual detail.
I'll elaborate on that in a lot of work.
Well, Mr. Caleb Masters, if you would, with your review, sir.
This is a really fun movie. This is a really fun... Art house action is a really great description of this, actually. The movie's a ton of fun. Action's very highly, highly, highly stylistic. Mm-hmm. And it's just so much fun. Like, the slow-mo, it's such a gimmick. But it works so beautifully, and it just creates, like, the most artistic action I've seen in a while. You know, you see a guy's mouth get shot off, and it looks sexy, to say the least. I mean, come on. Not said some violence looks sexy, but I'm just saying.
It's exactly what you're saying.
In the context of this movie.
Well, I think that's what this film is saying, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit.
Absolutely.
I think this film is saying violence is sexy.
Well, thank you.
Yes, but absolutely. Yeah, it's great.
You like it. All right, Mr. Dalton Stewart, if you would, sir.
Well, I'm actually going to agree with Dustin for what I suspect might be the only time this episode. He keeps making a face every time someone says art house action. He goes, like someone just said something like about his mother. And I'm going to agree with him on this because it's not an art house action film. It is pure 80s action film. It's having a dialogue. It's having a discourse with every film Sylvester Stallone did before Judge Dredd. It's having a discourse with Die Hard. It's having a conversation with the 1980s. And it's having a very important conversation about violence. We'll talk more about that in my analysis. But I think that's what is fun about this film, is it does what satire should do in this context, where it lampoons something, but it shows why what it's lampooning is fun. Mm. And that's what this film is. It's a lot of fun. I will agree with Arthur to some extent. It lost a little bit of its initial visceral funness for me in the home viewing. The only other time I've seen this was in theaters. The 3D did look great. It was shot in 3D. Mm-hmm. And normally I'm a detest 3D, but in this
film, I could see this looking very good in 3D.
The slow-mo scenes especially, they really heightened the... I mean, they go all out.
Well, that scene at the end when Mom is falling off the edge, it looks brilliant. Incredible.
Yeah, which actually the translation to 2D doesn't look very good.
No, you can actually tell it looks really bad. Like the scenes that were all 3D, the backdrops look so cheap.
Yeah,
so cheap.
The scenes that benefited the most from 3D hurt the most in the 2D. The home video viewing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's an important distinction, is there is some value to be had from 3D. I'm not against it as a rule.
Yeah.
I think there's some value, and I think this is a film that shows that, because it heightens the reality here. And I think this is a film that needs that. To carry the weight of its message, it needs a heightened reality. And that, for me, that works. Because we talk a lot on this show about violence and doing violence. And I think more than probably any film we've watched, that this isn't a film about doing violence. This is a film about violence. And this is an important distinction. We talk about Die Hard. That's a film about doing violence and what it means to do violence to another person, to be violent. And to me, I don't think Dredd's about that. I know I'm bleeding into my analysis a little bit here, but it's part of why I like this movie so much, is it takes a different spin on this action hero thing. Obviously, there's these formulaic things we talk about with Arthur and Caleb in terms of craftsmanship. It's very well done. The cast is all really solid. Specifically, I do want to point out Lena Headey and... Carl Urban are really spot on and fantastic in this film. And I like it a lot. I don't like it quite as much as my initial viewing. I think that theater vibe, theater atmosphere really added something to it for me. But I think this is still a fun film with something of merit and something fun. Excellent. One other point, I'm sorry. I was looking over my notes and I almost didn't see this. This film succeeds where other comic book films don't. Because it's not an origin story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
fair enough.
It gets that comic book heroes are James Bond. Yeah. We don't need to know why James Bond is James Bond. He just is James Bond.
And let him be.
I don't care why Judge Dredd is Judge Dredd. And they kind of play with that at the beginning, where the psychic character played by Olivia Thirlby is getting a read on him, there's something almost, and she gets cut off by the head judge and says, "Okay, that'll be enough." Because we don't need to know any more about Judge Dredd. You know what we need to know about Dredd? He's the law.
That's right.
End of the conversation.
Judge
Negotiations. Jury. Negotiations over. The sentence is death. And that's all I've got for you.
Judge, jury.
All right, well, thank you, Dalton. Right. What I would say about this movie is, visually, it is very well realized. The slow-mo scenes, again, when Mama is in the bathtub, the very first
great,
scene.
Right?
It's gorgeous. I mean, it really is interesting visually. This music, I listen to this, you know, crank to 11, because you should. Mm. And
it's got a really great dubstep score.
Yeah, I dig it a lot.
Score.
And so that was very, very fun. Performances by Carl Urban's chin were somewhat monosyllabic, but you know.
Best supporting body part.
Best supporting body part, yeah. So there's.
Why was he not nominated for an Oscar for that? Honorary Oscar, best supporting body part? Come on.
Yeah.
We talked about that when this movie came out last year a lot.
This movie is like most movies as far as the acting goes. The best roles go to the villains, and the villains chew the scenery and do what they need to do.
For sure.
And
Lena Headey is a great actor.
Yeah, she really is. And so that's all solid and fine and fun. I guess I expected more from it. I expected this great revisioning of an action movie. What I got instead was a video game style plot where you're getting to the big boss at the end. I thought of The Raid, which I haven't actually seen, but it seems to be almost the same movie.
Oh, more of that soon.
Oh, it is. And in fairness, it's no one was copying each other. These films were developed at the same time.
Well, that's fine, but I'm just saying that whole big boss kind of action movie.
I get what you're saying
design.
About the video game, but go up to the next level, get to the boss at the top, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And it's kind of apocalyptic, you know, sort of gritty, hard R kind of 80s action movie. I mean, this movie is fine, it's fun, but it's every bit as good as Strange Days. It's every bit as good as Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man, starring Mickey Rourke.
Rourke and Don Johnson. The immaculate Don Johnson.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun, you know, but
fairness to the film, its source material predates all of that.
Sure it does.
That is its post-apocalyptic look at American law. Predates all of these things. I mean, Dredd's been running since, I want to say, the late 70s.
But I'm just talking about the cinematic realization of it. Okay. It looks just like those. It looks like Prayer of the Roller Boys. I don't know if you saw that one. It looks like Class of 1999. It looks like just these kind of, you know...
So you didn't dig on the set design at all?
No, I mean, the set design...
I
said looks like. It feels the experience is like that. Because, obviously, the budgeting and the realization visually is a little bit better, sharper than either of those last two movies I mentioned. But as far as the genre or the class that I put it in, it belongs on premium cable reruns. I mean, and not TNT necessarily.
This is a film you discover on HBO.
Yeah.
You're going to go to bed. It's 8 o'clock. I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying. This is a film you accidentally stumble across and watch the entire movie even though you were going to go to bed.
Right.
I get what you're saying.
And you would finish it.
Now, the question I have for you is, do you think this is meritable of a cult classic? Because this movie has a very hardcore audience that is... of a cult classic feel to it.
There are Dredd 2 petitions online.
That has only to do with source material fanboys. I don't think it has anything to do with
disagree. I totally disagree with it, Dustin. There are a lot of cinephiles out there, of which I listen to the very podcast / film. A lot of guys who have never read the comics who really do dig this movie a lot.
The following for the Dredd comic is primarily UK-based, and I think that this film does have a pretty big following here in the US.
Well, I don't know what to think of
He's
that.
He's baffled.
I'm baffled by that because it's not that good. It's good. It's all right.
It's just not that good.
Yeah, it's all right. But it's just is not that good. All right, so there you go, dear listener. Now you know what we think about the movie itself, but that doesn't really matter. You know what really matters?
The analysis.
Is the analysis. What's going on inside?
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think with fly thing.
Let's begin with our guest tonight, Mr. Caleb Masters. What analysis bring you, sir?
Okay, so let's look at Dredd. He's judge, jury, and executioner, right? He goes in. He is the law. Okay, so here's what I'm looking at. This is a critique on the American justice system.
Certainly.
And I'm going to lean towards the direction of it is saying, why all the bullcrap? Why all the red tape? What is up with all this? We have all these ridiculous laws when we should just boil it down. It should be easier. It should be simpler. Something I couldn't disagree with more. However, in this movie, in the context of this universe, I think it's a lot of fun. Because basically, you give all the power to these certain people, these key people, and then they're the ones who pretty much make the law for everyone else. And whenever they feel like enforcing it, it's up to them. And that's why, I mean, in this universe, they're particularly picky about who they choose to be judges. However, the judges pretty much have all the power. There is no Supreme Court. There's a little bit of a hierarchy, but there is no trial. There is, if I say you're guilty, you're guilty. Now, They are the police, exactly.
This is LAPD circa 1993. they don't play.
And I share the opinion of NWA.
And
move on.
But this movie is saying that the American justice system is too soft on criminals. There's a one point in the movie, Judge Dredd's got a guy at gunpoint. He says, put down your gun and you'll get to live. He's like,
I can, my bargaining chip is life without parole.
Well, exactly. Right? Yeah. He's like, if you put your gun down, you get to go to prison for the rest of your life. You know, it's like, holy crap. And you know, I thought, you know, the first time watching it, I really wasn't going this analytically. So this time I was really breaking down, like, looking, okay, what is this movie doing? So in this case, I'm like looking, I think in this movie, at no point points out how wrong this is. In fact, I think it is all gung-ho about people offing each other. And on top, offing criminals.
Well, no, we'll get there. I think you're in, I think you're incorrect, but I'll let
you finish. Okay, absolutely. So I'm just saying, we're looking at, we have a justice system, two soft on criminals. We're going to give, instead of, we should leave the judgment up to the few, as opposed to the courts, just give the power to the few and give them this infallible judgment, give judgment to infallible beings, mm-hmm. as opposed to a system that, while flawed, also tends to let criminals off. So I don't think there's some criticism here.
And then I think the historical context plays in that. The rise of Thatcherism and, her, that tough-on-crime sort of neoconservative
Absolutely.
Understanding. That's all there. And Lady Thatcher, what she did. The Iron Lady, may she rest
in peace. And I think this is a very conservative movie. I really do.
And I think you're incorrect.
Well, Mr. Dalton Stewart, why don't you refute that?
Caleb's analysis bleeds so heavily into mine. That's why I basically just forced myself to go next. And it's possible that this is part of my knowledge of the source material. I had to think for a second. It's possible this is coming from that I do have some working knowledge of the source material. That it is an answer to that hard line Thatcherism.
I think the source material totally is that.
Yeah,
but
it is
that
a response
may or may not
to.
Be the case.
And that might color my viewing of the film, because that is how I view it.
And I'll say, I have not read any of the comments.
I haven't either.
I am vaguely aware of some things about it.
I haven't either. I'm just aware of, I've read about it in an academic sense.
Okay.
And that is, to me, that this is an important line in the film, is I am the law. And I normally don't talk about film theory that much, but I'm going to a little bit tonight, and just in terms of formula. Because, as I said, it's about doing violence, and the difference. There is a difference between films about violence and films about doing violence. This is a film about violence in that Dredd does the violence, but we aren't focusing on, when a scene of action happens, we aren't focusing on Dredd being cool, doing cool guy stuff. We're watching what's happening to the person when they get shot. We're looking at the violence, not the doer of the violence. I think it's very important is we're forced to look at the consequences of the gun. We're forced to look at the consequences of someone being killed.
Well, that's why they keep his helmet on. It makes him a cipher, right?
He is a cipher.
Yeah.
And that's, we don't want to identify with Dredd, because Dredd's a dick. Plain and simple. Dredd's not a good guy.
True that.
And Dredd knows he is. Dredd knows that this is 6% is what he says. 6% is the number of calls we can respond to. Because this is a broken system. Because society is inherently flawed. Mm-hmm. Not that it is an experiment, a valuable experiment worth fighting for. But I think that's what Dredd is trying to say. Is when you pile us together like this, bad things are going to happen. When you pile us in heaps atop each other, there is no recourse but for us to lash out against one another, because we're piled on top of each other, just stuck together, without any room to breathe. And what I think this film finally comes down on, after all of this is said and done, what it finally, the side of this discussion, is that fascism is sexy, and that's why it's dangerous. Because, as Caleb said, we cut through the red tape, the bad guys get shot. But life isn't that simple. The criminal justice system isn't that simple. Wouldn't it be better if it was that simple? No, not really. That accomplishes nothing. We have no further understanding of one another at the end of the day when we do this. So to me, this film is saying is that's the reason that extremism and absolutism is so appealing, is because it gives us the clear-cut answers that we cannot get from life. And that's what Dredd is saying, is you need to be careful of these things. You need to be careful of the people who want to be judge, jury, and executioner, because there's probably something angry and broken inside of them that makes them want to do that. And that's something that's said about Dredd. There's he's controlled, but he's angry. And there's a tightly coiled white man's rage in there that's wanting to lash out.
I mean, just look at that chin and that frown. I mean,
he's grumpy cat. He is grumpy cat.
And I think this is a credit to Carl Urban's performance.
Oh, yeah.
Dredd is always drawn in every picture. Again, I've never read it, but I've seen a lot. I looked at the artwork, which is beautiful. Dredd's pretty much always drawn with a frown. And I think Carl Urban is trying to capture some of that in his performance, trying to bring that aspect of the character to the screen. And I think that's what makes his performance so effective here. And that's what his performance is what helps this film thrive. It's also Olivia Thirlby, her character's arc. Basically deciding she doesn't want any part of this system. Mm-hmm. She has to shoot a man and then talk to his wife, who saves their lives. And she realizes that this is not a system I want to be a part of. Okay. Because these are people trying to get by, and I don't think I can do this. And again, I've gotten a little disorganized. I've gotten a little rambly, so I'm going to kind of wrap it up because Caleb's got something he wants to say in response. So I will just say that I think at the end of the day, Dread is one of those films that if you got to pay close attention, much like a Paul Verhoeven film, to get the satire. Because if you blink, you might miss it. But I think that's what Dredd is saying, is we need to be careful of absolutism, because it is sexy. Caleb, you had something to say.
Yeah, okay, and I'll agree with you to this extent. The movie is showing a world that is very screwed up.
Yes, and
in that sense, I would agree with you in saying that that right there is the satire. This is a really dark world.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think that the movie celebrates the fact that there is someone, judge, jury, and executioner in that world. It makes things clear-cut. And I think one of the most for me, the things that jumps out to me most about this is how cheapened and how dehumanified all the villains are. There's not one of them that is like shown as to be a real human being. They're all, I mean, other than a couple cowardly like acts. I mean, you've got Avon Barksdale over there, who's like, once he gets inside this girl's head, he tries to do screwed up stuff. And then you've got all these other cookie cutter bad guys who are just firing away.
Mm-hmm.
They all get off, just like in all action movies. They're not real human beings. They're just things for Dredd to kill. And Mama is, she's pretty much pure evil. She's a drug dealer. Not pure evil, but she's a drug dealer. There's not a whole lot to her. There's not a lot of dimension there.
I think there's certainly a very interesting feminist critique of this film about a woman's access to power.
Well, that's fair.
Going on.
That's fair. Yeah.
There's something very interesting going on with the character of Madeline Madrigal. I think was her name. I think there's something very interesting. I get what you're saying, Caleb.
Also, Lena Headey did a great job. I think Lena Headey did a great job. So I'm not.
No, yeah.
But I would say with your analysis, I think I could accept the point that it's a satire to the extent that it says that it's showing us that this entire world that we're looking at is bad.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's also showing in a bad world. You know, it makes a bad world a lot easier to live in. Clear cut answers that kill stuff.
What we were after now was the old surprise visit. That was a real kick, and good for laughs and lashings of the old ultra-violent.
Arthur Gordon, what analysis do you bring, sir?
Well, mine's not so political. Regardless, I'm going to hit on something Dalton mentioned earlier about a dialogue with other films. And I'm also going to mention, I'm going to key in on that adjective.
I'm glad you're going to talk about that.
The art house action flick.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay. Now, the term art house, or art house cinema, gets thrown around a lot.
It does.
Some people use it to describe any movie made outside of the Hollywood system, anything independent, anything foreign, is art house because they don't understand.
Which is incorrect.
However, the term art house is more appropriately used in describing films that don't follow a classical Hollywood style of narrative.
More correct.
And they feature techniques or use techniques in new ways or so artistic flares rather than in their traditional usage. For example, the use of the long take, the still shots, slow motion. These things often have a very pronounced usage in classical style. You might use slow motion when someone's running or something dramatic is happening. An art house may take slow motion and do it completely in an unexpected way where you wouldn't expect.
Somebody's cooking breakfast.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Flipping a pancake.
The frying
slow motion.
And egg. Yeah.
With a 5-minute still take of a frying pan.
Which, eagle-eyed listeners might remember, we saw a little bit of in Compliance.
Yeah,
There was a little bit of that. But an art house film, or at least a director who is a student of art house film, may use those things for a different effect. And I'm thinking of guys going back several decades, Hitchcock, Ford, Renoir, Orson Welles. These guys are using long takes. They're using tracking shots. They're using things that aren't typically used against the way they're supposed to be using the juxtaposition.
Somebody that just popped to my mind as you were talking was Sam Peckinpah.
Oh, definitely.
The originator of slow motion violence?
Well, I'll get there.
He's getting there. I'm sorry.
But usually these things break the narrative, if there is even a narrative to begin with. Sometimes some of these art house films are 2 hours of a person sitting on a bed.
Unfortunately.
And that's it.
Mm, yeah. I like that.
However, what I think Mr. Johnson, the critic who I quoted earlier, was pointing out. With his phrase about the art house action film, is that Dredd features several very artistic flourishes while maintaining the generic tropes of the action cinema.
Okay.
Okay. And this will lead us into the discourse with the 80s films and other Hollywood action films. What I see
and
Dredd
I think that's
as
a big part of this film.
Is either a commentary on, or a tribute to, or both, the violence of Hollywood cinema. And the first thing I picked up on was Carl Urban is playing Clint Eastwood, dressed as a judge.
Easily.
And I know that the Dredd character, when it was introduced, was based off of Eastwood's characters. So that connection is there. But I really just kept hoping Carl Urban would ask somebody if they felt lucky.
You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
But Dredd takes us into the future. I'm talking about the original comic. Mm-hmm. It takes us into the future, sets us in America, and everything has kind of gone to crap. And this is all from an outsider perspective mm-hmm. of the UK.
There's, as I was saying, there's a reason it's the Brits chose to write about America and not their own system.
And so we have a somewhat dystopian film directed by an Englishman adapting a British comic strip telling us about the future of America.
Yeah.
I think here is a very important remember that this comic was based off the characters of Clint Eastwood, who showed up in some very violent films in the 70s, mm-hmm. Which in the 70s was a lot more controversial than it is now. And there was probably some early commentary from Dredd about how America's love of guns and violence was probably going to be its downfall.
Certainly.
Because bodies are just bodies, asked Michael Bay. So we fast forward nearly 40 years, and we have Dredd, which not only features a man who sounds like Eastwood, but it looks like it was directed by three men who introduced America to ultraviolet cinema in the 60s and 70s. Don Siegel, Sam Peckinpah, and Arthur Penn. Those men also directed movies that could be referred to as art house action.
Now, Arthur, for the listener's sake, so they don't have to go to Wikipedia real fast, could you give them a couple of
Siegel, Dirty Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Peckinpah, Wild Bunch, Straw Dogs are going to be the ones that are going to most correlate with this. And Arthur Penn, Bonnie and Clyde.
Okay. Yeah. The listener would be familiar with their work. I just wouldn't just make sure in case the names didn't strike a bell right away.
And that's fair. And guess what? We once again have an outsider looking in, telling us that our movies are violent and that characters don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the characters in the films of Peckinpah and Penn and Siegel,
mm-hmm.
we have a body count of 102 in Dredd, and not a single one of those casualties mean anything.
Right.
They were all there simply to be killed in an extravagant fashion for commercial entertainment. I think Dredd may have something to say about violence in cinema. So what are some of the flares? Dredd is very brash and raw a lot of the time. This harkens back directly to Dirty Harry. And their brutal, realistic style. A lot of the Dirty Harry references just come from Dredd himself. He is essentially a walking Dirty Harry reference in his demeanor, his composure, the way his lines are delivered.
Yeah, the way he addresses criminals.
Yeah, right? And even those almost puns that he
makes. He calls them hotshot.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that scene plays real close to You Feel Lucky.
Yeah.
Punk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he has that just
have
that
it
smart
your way,
like,
shot.
It's cocky. It's a cocky. It's an arrogance that he has.
well, I'm sorry. Yeah. Hey, Craig. Yeah. It's very reminiscent of Hellboy's crap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so next, we have a lot of shootouts featuring multiple attackers, and they're done in a rapid montage sequence. Mm-hmm. Kill, blood, wound, spatter, repeat. Which takes us back to the death of Bonnie and Clyde in Penn's game-changing film. And also, we get a slow motion work when it isn't really expected, including a visually stunning death in the final sequence of the film. We get a lot of slow motion gunshots and blood splatter, similar to what Peckinpah was doing with slow motion and violence. Also, this whole House Under Siege, all against one style, sets up references the final act of Straw Dogs. What I do like about Dredd, and what I think it is doing here, is it is playing with and paying homage to the artistic flair of those directors. Those directors made movies that explored deep questions about violence and masculinity and culture. And they used artistic tricks that they learned from watching men like Kurosawa and Godard to help infuse their films with something fresh. And what Dredd does is take that and put it in an over-the-top B-movie action film where nobody means a thing. And in blending those ideologies so well, Dredd is capable of saying, look, America, you've been making violent, meaningless commercial action films for years, stealing the techniques of great auteurs, all to make a buck, and look where your future lies. And if that's the case, I stand and applaud Dredd.
That was a really, really great analysis.
I like that analysis. No, that's fine. Yeah,
I wish I had said something that smart. I was a little rambly this evening. That was very spot on, man.
Well done, sir.
Dustin Sells, what you got to bring to the
table?
Well,
I want to say about this movie is it demonstrates this interesting interplay with the analytical, theoretical concept of ideology. Now, ideology, as you guys know, but the dear listener may not know at home, does not necessarily mean a viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Ideology, in a theoretical sense, means the viewpoint of the ruling classes of those who are in power that is imposed upon those around us. It's not even something that we think about. It is we just do it anyway. It's what we do when we don't know we're doing it. That's what ideology is. It is that whole, it is the world that's pulled over your eyes, if I want to take Morpheus's quote. and that this is the assumption of this is just how things are and what we're going to do and what we're about. And what's interesting is that this also does what Slavoj Žižek does with ideology when he starts talking about fetishistic disavowal, how parts of ideology, when you come to realize it, are not so shiny and you don't like them so much. Fascism in the case of Judge Dredd, mm-hmm. this sort of do whatever is necessary police state sort of ideology. That sort of action, we all say, no, that's bad, that's terrible. We all say we don't want that. But fetishistic disavowal, this is a bit of Freud, mm-hmm. is where we say, I know that the shoe's not really a sexual object, but still it does this thing to me, right?
And I think, and that ties into a little bit of my analysis. I just,
a little bit.
Because it's clean, and you, as we're talking, my thoughts are getting cleaned up and organized a little mm-hmm. bit better. And I think that's what I was trying to get at, was we know we don't. We, you know, fascism is a loaded word now.
Sure it is.
Because obviously you can't think about fascism without thinking about World War II and the Holocaust. But really, fascism is a police state.
Yes.
Fascism mm-hmm. is, we crush all badness. What we have deemed as bad, and we will crush it. And that's where, I know it's bad, comma, but wouldn't it be cool if we could just shoot all the drug dealers on the spot?
Right.
And I think that's what Dredd's trying to address.
And exactly. I would say, though, that the debate really comes down to, is the movie celebrating this, or is it bringing the question? I think that's really borderline right there.
And I think it's a mess a little bit on that. Okay. I think it's a little confused, because I think the original source material intends to only provide the critique. It intends to only satirize. It intends to only lampoon. The film, on the other hand, seems to do it moves beyond the ideological analysis. Mm. And it moves in that fetishistic disavowal where we say, I know this is no good, but I still kind of like it. Mm. I still kind of want it. And what we might have to do in a police state, in that we might have to undergo certain torture techniques to gain intelligence. You know, there's this beatdown that happens where Dredd is abusing this person that they've arrested, this other drug minor lieutenant.
Just call him Avon Barksdale.
That guy. As that's all going on, you know, the ideal representation of truth and moderation and neoliberalism and all of that is the female character.
Embodied by Anderson. Olivia Thirlby's character.
So she says, no, don't do that. Don't, you know, that's over the line. Mm. So what does she do?
She probes his brain.
Something far worse.
Far more invasive.
And, I mean, you know, I mean, the
hey,
man.
We don't have to brutally beat the guy up. Let's just screw with his head.
And he pees his pants as a result. Mm. I mean, this is, I think it's very clear that this is worse.
And we don't know what happens. We are actually spared that. Because the insinuation here being, you can take seeing Dredd shoot people in the face. What she just did to him, you can't deal with.
But what happens, though, is she invades his head, finds the intelligence, which is good to know now, and it's worth knowing. Now we know that the slow-mo drug's being manufactured and distributed slowly by Mama, solely from this building, and so we've got to take her out, because she's Osama bin Laden, and whatever means necessary to take out this threat are, it's fine. Mm. And in the end, there is this idea of she is violating the rules. You know, she loses her weapon, so she thinks she's going to lose anyway. So she lets one person go. They still go into this room, massacre everybody that's in there. The man, I mean, gives the most torturous, cruel, and unusual Fifth Amendment violating bit of punishment I've ever seen for this Mama character. And does this. But then the film goes on and humanizes him.
I wonder if he can get through 100 feet of concrete.
Because Anderson has violated the letter of the law, has violated the rules, should be failed immediately.
In this fascist police state where we deal in absolutes, she failed.
But he goes ahead and gives her a pass, totally contrary to who his character is. Because in the end, those guys, they might be okay guys if we go ahead and let them do this. If we go ahead and let them have that power, it might turn out all right. It might be worth it because they might not be all bad. They might not be such terrible dictators. So we can fetishistically disavow this abuse of power.
And I think what Dustin is saying here, listener, is really what's going to help all of us. We're all in this together, listener. This is a safe place. We're with you. You're with us. What Dustin's saying is really going to help reconcile how Caleb and I came to such different conclusions about this film. And I think you're spot on right now. I thought we were going to get into a fight. It is a bit of a mess. When you say it, yeah, it is a bit of a mess.
I mean, this is how the ideological state apparatus, thank you, Louis Althusser, begins to work. You can footnote that later in the show notes, somebody.
No one's going to. We got to give the explanation here.
The ideological state apparatus is how the state produces this idea of this is how it's going to be. This is the only way. The way things are is inevitable. That is, again, the world, as Morpheus says so wisely, that is pulled over our eyes. And so what this film does for us is it gives a critique of the police state and then takes it back.
I wouldn't say it takes back. It just says, hey, here's how crappy this could be. However, it's worth it.
It's worth it, yeah. So this is really, really bad, but it could be worse. You know, so, but this is better than, you know, than Mega City 1. And so NSA, yeah, we don't want everybody probing our minds and our cell phones and our email accounts for information. But if they found the bad guys, maybe it's worth it. Maybe just in this case. Maybe this one circumstance or situation. And so the ideology itself says, yeah, this is kind of the way it is. It's sort of inevitable. And at the same time, we're saying we don't really like it, but we kind of do. We're saying the shoes really aren't sexy, but they kind of get us off. That's what the movie's doing.
I guess what I'm saying is I couldn't agree more with you.
Wow, I'm making that my ringtone.
No, I know, and I guess that was a much cleaner way of cutting to what I think I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Was that, okay, we talked about fascism, we're going to talk about leftism. What Marx was saying...
It might come up.
What Marx was saying was this system is broken.
Right.
And we need to completely reevaluate it. And I think what the danger of the system that Dredd may or may not advocate in its messy messages. No, it's not broken. We're just not doing it hard enough.
Right.
We just need to do it better. And I think that's what's fun about Dredd. And to me, the reason it comes across as satirical and not advocating it is that it is so cheeky.
Yeah.
I think the film is very, very silly. It's very tongue firmly planted in cheek.
And I think the cheekiness is how it disavows itself.
Okay. And I think that's where you and I differ.
Yeah. And that's how it says, yeah, we're gonna make it silly and fun and sort of the sexy violence and that kind of thing. You know, so you know this is kind of popcorn fair and Carl Urban's gonna say, hot shot, you know, yeah. Like, you know, he's gonna say these sort of things and we're gonna go, oh yeah, this is just fun, meaningless, mindless stuff. But then that's how we slip in the underside. This is really kind of the better way to do things. That this guy ends up being, again, Judge Dredd ends up being the better person because he extends this sort of grace to Anderson so that she can be just like him. I mean, not so that he can be more like her.
That's very interesting. Guys, I think that was some solid analysis.
Well, that's a show, I think.
Let me just point out, this movie is Eomer climbing a tower to take down Avon Barksdale and Cersei Lannister. It's a pretty kick-ass movie.
Yeah, that is
pretty rad.
That's some good stuff. And,
well, while Juno's best friend tags along.
Oh, McCoy.
Yeah.
I think if only that makes it watchable.
All right. Well, thank you, dear listener, for listening to our analysis. We will kind of footnote some things in the show about Zizek and about Althusser, about history of violences. We'll talk about some of the source material. We'll kind of get some Wikipedia articles and that kind of thing because we really did kind of look into the substrate today. I think we got way down in the sediment. And Arthur did some great stuff with art cinema, so we'll maybe reference some stuff to Peckinpah and violence and slow motion and all of that stylistic stuff to kind of help you see what we're going with and how we're handling this. So we'll include those things on mostly probably the Facebook. Arthur, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, it is a website designed for social networking. It was developed by Mark Zuckerberg. Apparently he ripped the idea off, if you believe David Fincher. Regardless, you can find us at
www.facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast. You mean it was David Fincher's idea?
It was.
I want to say David Fincher one more time. You know why? That's that drinking game people play with Dalton.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, just remember,
you guys are hurting me. You're twisting the knife right now.
Just remember, a girl breaks up with you, you make Facebook and become a billionaire. Just remember, guys.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. All right, well, there's another means of social media by which one could converse with us, and it is on another medium, and Dalton's going to tell us a little bit about that.
I just want to say a little something, since Arthur just got done talking. In case you people have forgotten, this world operates under the same rules as the rest of the world, and that world is social media. Facebook isn't the law, people. Twitter's the law. Facebook is a common criminal, guilty of murder, guilty of the manufacture and the distribution of the narcotic known as slow-mo, and as of now, under the sentence of death. I am the law. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find us on Twitter at good underscore trash. And I posted, in preparation for this episode, I posted a great piece of artwork from the people over at Mondo Posters, based out of Austin, Texas. A really fantastic poster they did as a promo for a showing of this film that I think took place at the Alamo Drafthouse. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But if you're not aware, Mondo Posters, they do limited run, hand-drawn, hand-painted artworks that are film posters. Sometimes they do old films, sometimes they do current films, and very often it is in conjunction with a showing that's taking place at the Alamo Drafthouse. But I posted a picture of a Dread poster they did that's absolutely gorgeous. So you should take a look at that.
You should send that to me. I'll put it on the Tumblr.
I will. I will do that right now,
hey,
actually.
Which is at goodtrashjohnnycraft.tumblr.com. We got pictures and stuff there. So
we do?
It's pretty. Before we play our game, guys, I think we have to do the last thing that we do when we analyze a movie.
We probably should do that.
Which is play Shelf or Trash.
Else
or Instead. Mr. Arthur Gordon, Shelf or Trash, Else or Instead, go.
I can't say it's going to go on the shelf, but I will recommend watching it, especially if you like action movies. And I say that you watch this with Dirty Harry, with Straw Dogs, and with Bonnie and Clyde, each of which really introduced Hollywood to this ultra-violent style of filmmaking. And also, just because there's a lot of talk of torture and getting information through that means, go watch Zero Dark Thirty.
I think that's fair.
Because of Zero Dark Thirty.
I know, I think Zero Dark Thirty and Dread making a fantastic double feature, not the least of which because they both came out in 2012.
There's something to that, too, as well. Mr. Caleb Masters, what say
you? So, here's what I think. Raid Redemption, which apparently Dalton talked about extensively in last year's podcast. So
I talked about Dread and the Raid a lot last year.
And I remember Dread. I don't remember the Raid so much. Must be it.
The Raid was one of my top films of 2012.
You know, that would have been a movie that I kind of forgot about when I was making my list. Not because it wasn't great, because it was a straight-to-DVD. The Raid Redemption, folks, is a movie that...
Actually, I saw the Raid in theaters. A very limited run here.
AMC. Yeah.
No way. Yeah, are you kidding me?
Way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I kind of regret not
took
saying
it. Took my dad to see
although, you know, a sequel is in the works. They actually have a poster up for it and everything.
I know. Whoa. So I'm really excited.
Sounds like the old horror movie model, where you make the poster before you make the movie, right? Go ahead.
So I'm not going to go too deep in it, but basically, think about this. The Raid is a kung fu version of Dread. Now, when I say that, I mean the plot structure is there's some bad guys in the top of a tower, and there's some good guys trying to get into the tower.
And they get stuck in the tower.
And they get stuck in the tower, and they have to fight everyone. Instead of using, like, one-liners, Carl Urban's chin, and some...
future weapons.
Future weapons. They're using their fists, knives, and swords.
Elbows. And knees.
Anything.
And awesomeness.
And, okay, I gotta say, guys, some of the most impressive fight sequences of all time. I'm not saying of just kung fu movies. I'm saying of all freaking time. It was just the most ridiculous fight scenes I have seen in any movie. Most well choreographed I've seen in any movie. It's a ton of fun.
Well, and there's a reason it works so well is because the lead hero and the lead bad guy are both martial artists, and they choreograph the fights in the film.
Well, that makes sense. Then. That makes sense.
That's why that film worked. Yeah, Caleb, great pick.
Yeah. So, other than that, Demolition Man, just because.
Excellent. Mr. Donald Stewart.
Well, you know, I am going to go ahead and put it on the shelf. I think it's definitely worth your time. I don't think you're wasting your time with this one. Obviously, we've just talked about it for almost an hour. I think there's a lot to look at with this film. I think it's a lot of fun. Desmond's making a face.
No,
sorry. But in terms of Elser instead, I'm going to say, what else you should watch? Underrated comic book film starring an anti-hero who dispenses his own brand of justice.
The Crow.
You should watch 2004's The Punisher starring Thomas Jane. The Crow.
I can get behind that.
You know, I think it's underappreciated. Yeah. I think it's
currently on Hulu streaming.
It is. Yeah.
There you go. Watch that. But more importantly, you should watch a cinema classic from the year of our Lord, 1998, by the film Wunderkind, Mr. Paul Verhoeven. It's a little film about fascism. It's a little film about how cool it is to kick some ass. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Starship Troopers, Rico's Roughnecks. Do you want to live forever? All right, well, let's get in this dropship and go kick some ass. It's a good movie. It's a film that nobody got when it came out. At all. It was panned because people were like, what in the hell is this movie? And about a year later, everyone was like, oh, Paul Verhoeven's doing the same thing he did with RoboCop. Mm-hmm. He's looking at militaristic fascism and saying, guys, isn't this a little bit silly, while also having a good time exploring the what makes action films great, which is how cool it is to watch pretty people go punch other pretty people and shoot aliens.
Excellent.
So watch those movies.
Excellent.
Dust and Cells.
I'm going to go ahead and say trash, but I'm not going to say necessarily else or instead, because if you've seen it, it's not like I think that's a regret or anything like that. It is a mess. It's got some problems. There's things going on with it and all that. But it's time spent.
You shouldn't try time travel back and stop yourself. But
yeah,
don't go out of your
so
way.
So whichever that ends up categorizing for you, dear listener, but it's in my trash because it's not going to go on my shelf. I mean, it's TNT-able. It's definitely the movie channel.
You don't want to watch some TNT. Yeah, this isn't TV, this is HBO.
Now, both of my picks have already been mentioned, one of them being RoboCop. Verhoeven and that police state sort of hyper-violence,
sure.
Totally there. Also, RoboCop 2, for that matter. I think it maintains the tone from film to film, though Verhoeven's out, sir.
Well, fun fact, apparently, in the 80s, when Judge Dredd was optioned as a movie originally, it became a movie that we all know and love.
RoboCop.
Yep. I've heard that before. The original draft of the script became RoboCop.
Huh. Well, that may
really
be true. I did not know that. The other one also mentioned tonight is a more fun, more on the nose, and more consistently critiquing fascist film, that being Demolition Man, starring Sylvester Stallone. Not Judge Dredd, starring Sylvester Stallone, but Demolition Man.
I cannot believe that Demolition Man came out in 1994. You'd think it came out in 1999 or 2000, because it's that postmodern.
Yeah, it is.
It is that much.
In one sense, however, the vibe you get from watching it is also a movie out of 1985. It's kind of a freak of nature. I love it.
It's having a conversation.
We call it the Fifth Element effect.
It's having a conversation with a 90s liberalism that hadn't even happened yet.
Right.
It's a film that is so much improved in hindsight.
Yeah. It's a good movie, and it's really funny. And so
it's hysterical.
And Sandra Bullock has a fun turn in that.
Wesley Snipes is fun in that movie.
Kind of
too.
A quirky, weird
Wesley
turn.
Wesley Snipes is always awesome.
Well, he is
always bet on black.
Always bet on black. Moving on, dear listener.
Did I ever tell you about the time I watched Demolition Man and Drop Zone in like the same day?
No.
Oh man,
that's a good day.
Yeah, it was a good day.
Well, let's play a game, guys. You know, this movie was starring not a human but a body part.
Yeah.
It's Carl Urban's chin. And Arthur, why don't you go ahead and set up our game for us, if you don't mind, sir?
Well, we always tend to lean on film lists, but I thought this would be a little fun, because we've talked up this chin, this mighty chin, so much.
For like a year.
The chin of power.
That, it's obvious, there are so many iconic body parts, at least facial body parts even.
Yeah.
And that's
Marlon Brando's chins. And The Godfather.
Okay, don't do it anymore, because they're probably all on my list.
All right, never mind.
However, for example... We can say Angelina's leg in the Oscars.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
I think Jennifer Lopez was noted for some physical attribute at one point.
It was insured.
It was.
She insured it.
I don't know what you guys are talking about,
Shakira's hips don't lie. I like big butts, and I cannot lie. So, we're going to talk about very unique and standout physical attributes of actors and actresses.
Iconic, if you
iconic,
will.
Yes.
Well, Arthur, why don't you go ahead and
I will.
Set it up.
For an example, for my honorable mention, Jay Leno's chin.
Yeah.
Because when you talk about chins, Jay Leno's the king of the chin. Jack Nicholson's eyebrows and the Joker smile.
Mm-hmm.
He's epic. It's iconic. Anytime I think of Joker, I think of Jack Nicholson.
Oh, sure.
And Alfred Hitchcock's profile was iconic as a signature to a television show.
Good evening.
But I want to give a mention to my boys, the Sons of Anarchy, and Tommy Flanagan for his Glasgow smile.
Oh, yeah.
He has the two Joker scars going up his cheeks from an actual mugging when he was in DJing in Scotland or Ireland.
Something that actually, I think it was in Glasgow. Well, Glasgow. I think it actually was in Glasgow.
So, there you go. That's
excellent.
What I've got for you.
And that's why he always plays a hard-edged bad guy, is because that's the thing that really happened to him.
Yeah.
Well, Dalton Stewart, what are your favorite body parts? in cinema.
He said it in a funny way.
Roscoe doesn't like it.
You know what? I thought of a lot, weirdly.
When you start thinking about it, yeah.
I thought of Jet Li's pockmarks.
Yeah.
There is something about the body part that the face that really gives an actor their look. Jeremy Renner is getting all these parts as an action guy because he looks like he might have been in a fight or two in his life.
Yeah.
And I thought of some of these. One I thought of was actually about 5 seconds ago when Arthur mentioned Tommy Flanagan, and it's Michael K. Williams, a.k.a. Omar Little from The Wire, who has a distinctive and very real scar right across the middle of his face.
Now, is there another role I might know him from?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, that's kind of his defining role. He has a small part in 12 Years a Slave, which I still haven't seen, but
That's kind of his defining role. But he's been around. He's a character actor, as with many Wire actors. You know, one I also thought of was Adrian Brody's nose.
Yeah.
And Adrian Brody's not an actor that gets a lot of work. But, man, what a schnoz.
He's got quite the schnoz.
What a schnoz. And obviously, once already mentioned, Jack Nicholson's brow. Just his entire, his eyebrows, his forehead, really everything north of his nose.
Yeah.
It's just great. He's got a good look. And one that is probably cheap, but I'm going to say it anyway, Hugo Weaving's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so distinctive and
his jaw shape, too. That's true. Like, I don't know. Anytime you see him, you just... as soon as... Like, Red Skull, you're like, oh, that's
well, him. Yeah. And he has a very specific hairline, too. Yeah. But that voice, to me, is so specific that they were actually able to find an actor in the second two Matrix movies that sounded enough like him they could cast him in that weird doppelganger part.
Right.
I forget. You know what I'm talking about.
I mean, it's so distinctive.
The part about 2 and 3 that doesn't make any sense.
It's,
right.
It's so distinctive that you can actually understand that he was Megatron in Transformers despite all the sound effects they put over the voice, right?
Caleb, have you picked some body parts for us?
I've got some body parts for you.
Let's hear them.
Some real body parts.
This sounds weird. We did not think of a very good name for this game. I'm scarred right now.
Okay,
Caleb, I'm sorry.
So guys, Owen Wilson, look at that nose. I mean, come on, it's crooked, it's broken. I mean, and you see it, you're like, Owen Wilson, no one else could have that nose. I mean, Adrian Brody's is just it's long, man.
It's perfect. It's a Roman nose.
It's a schnoz.
This one's like a schnoz. See, this one's a schnoz. It's just indistinguishably broken, and it's never going back. It's like big, red, it's just crooked right there.
And then crooked back on the other one.
It's
a zigzag.
Exactly.
It's classic a great, it's nose. A good pick. It's a good pick. Well, and his brother, too, they both have very specific faces.
Yeah. They do. Although I think Owen is definitely more distinct than Luke. But,
for sure.
Now let's go Paul Newman's eyes. Just look into those eyes.
Oh man!
Just looking at those
good
eyes and
those beautiful
melt.
Blues.
Yeah, exactly.
Melt.
I mean, how can you say no to those? Man, that's game. I mean,
nobody can eat 50 eggs, Caleb.
Nobody.
No, that's a good pick, man.
I like that.
Anything else?
That's all I got for you guys.
That's good.
I mean, Jay Leno and Jack Nicholson has been double taken, so.
Well, I'm going to begin with just kind of some contemporary Hollywood. I mean, almost no longer contemporary as he gets older and older.
You're old.
You get older and older.
Harrison Ford has a very distinctive
Harrison
scar on his chin, so distinctive that it has to be explained in The Last Crusade.
Very good point.
And so I find that to be interesting. Also, there is another kind of Star Wars reference, the big change in Mark Hamill's face from four to five because of the car accident he was in, or motorcycle accident that he was in. And so that all results in the kind of very distinctive face. I want to talk about three other classical Hollywood characters. First of all, Peter Lorre and his uneven eyeballs.
Yes,
there is something about that particular face that makes him very, very interesting and fun to look at.
Yeah.
Also, we got to talk about a stash. It is Movember, and no stash bears mentioning more than that of Clark Gable. The pencil stash from the 30s, Scarlett O'Hara, Gone with the Wind. I mean, if there's another official feature that's iconic, I can't think of what it
would be. if you need it, and if you're like, well, that's not a thick enough stash, let's go Nick Offerman, the official spokesperson of No Shave November.
Yes.
For the Australian Council of Movember. Yeah, that's a stash, too.
That is a stash.
Good pick.
Okay.
Clark Gable. Mm.
Clark Gable?
That one. Hugh Jackman's muscles. Okay, now what I mean is... No.
No, keep talking.
Yeah, no, he's got some.
Listen, watch Origins and watch the new one. He is not altered whatsoever. His veins are popping. They're like, if it was in 3D, his veins would be popping out of the screen. I mean, I'm serious. These things are, it's like, you're like, looking at those, you're like, there's no way this is real. Oh, they're real.
Yeah, there are vines going out.
Vines going out of his body. I mean, I have seen ripped actors. I have seen Arnold McVay. I have seen bodybuilders play roles. But I have never seen veins popping out of muscle like that. Just saying.
And I want
to
say...
That's the last time you're allowed to speak with candy in your mouth on the show. We're running a professional establishment here, Caleb. You too, Dustin. I'll kick you out of your own house.
Speaking of
Halloween and Halloween candy...
Here we
and
go.
That which is iconic. And
Michael Myers' mask
has
doesn't count.
Something to do with health. No.
I know where you're going.
Bela Lugosi's Widow's Peak.
Yep.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Everybody who does a Dracula for Halloween, they got to draw it on. It's not enough to paint the face white, to slick the hair back, to put the teeth in, and have on the Hungarian cape and tuxedo. You've got to have that particular point, or you're not Dracula. I mean, he has defined the entirety of the character, the most depicted character in film, second only to Sherlock Holmes.
Haven't they fought each other before?
With a receding hairline.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very iconic.
For sure.
And so I would just, let's look a little bit of classical Hollywood, look at the 30s and the 40s, and see a little bit of that.
Well, you can look at all those monster movie actors, and basically all of them are real. Lon Chaney Jr. and Sr. I mean,
well, I thought about naming every actress in the 50s and 60s who had a mole on her face, right, or a painted-on mole.
Yeah, and yeah, right.
Marilyn. Yeah. Marilyn. Good call.
Yeah, good call. Good
see
call.
Also Cindy Crawford.
Yeah. I was trying to avoid mentioning, you know, sort of those objectifying.
We've been talking about the male gaze a lot lately, so I think there's a reason we all went guys.
Pamela Anderson didn't come up. There are attributes, but we're not going to discuss them.
I mean, Angelina Jolie's lips. I mean, come on.
We are men of class.
It is beneath us to mention Julia Roberts' amazingly large mouth and teeth. We're not going to do that.
That's a smile, brother. All right, well, let's go talk about some other stuff.
Let's talk about some other stuff. Let's talk about what's got us fired up this week in pop culture. Caleb Masters, go.
It's a thing we always do.
We always do this.
You've got to say it's a thing we always do, because that's part of the thing we always do.
Oh, is this saying it's a thing we always do?
Yeah, man.
Dalton's stuck in a rut.
You're screwing up my rhythm, bro.
Hey, Caleb, you fired up?
I am fired up this week. Like, this might be the most fired up in a while, actually. Yeah. Okay, so I've got a long list, so let's start from the top.
That's good, I don't.
One, gaming stuff, just because it's weird. I haven't been into gaming. No, see, I only talk about gaming. See, two things. I finally picked up Batman Arkham Origins, which I know our two other co-hosts have picked up. I am very, very, very near to the end. It's exciting. Game's not great. Story's incredible. If you're a Batman fan, that means Dustin. You gotta go buy a console and play it on just for the story. It's good. It's good stuff. Two, New Zelda is coming out in a week. Zelda fanboy.
Really?
So, oh, yeah. 3DS. 3DS.
Oh, okay.
And it's getting, like, best reviews out there all the time. Three, 12 Years a Slave. I saw it at a press screening last week.
And it's terrible, right? The acting's no good.
Oh, yeah. The acting's no good. Awful. I can't even pronounce the guy's Chickawal. I can't even say his
name. Bouncer right, Bow Wow.
Right.
Chickaboomaloo. No. Seriously, people, that is the movie. This is going to be the movie. This is going to be one of the heavyweights of the Oscars this year. If you can see it, please do. It is the Schindler's List of slavery. And I'm just saying, like,
the definitive film. Yeah.
The definitive film about slavery, because it's from a slave's point of view. It's not from some, you know, it's not from a white guy's point of view like most movies we've seen before. This is from their point of view. And not to mention, the acting's knocks out part. And it's a story that is really just human. And it's unfleshingly, it doesn't shy away from the darkness of the issue. So it's good stuff. And one more movie that I wanted to be here last week so I could anti-buzz on this movie, was Thor 2. And sadly, I wasn't here to anti-buzz on it, so not great.
Yeah, we had a whole conversation about it.
Did you? I listened. Tom Hiddleston's awesome. Go. It should be retitled Loki Steals the Show.
Literally, our entire pop culture last week just devolved into us talking about superhero films.
Now we're sick of them.
Well, then I won't. Well, yes. Actually, I did. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and last, I'm here. On Saturday, I've got tickets to see this band from the 90s called Pearl Jam, because some of us really like music.
Nerds. I might be going to that,
and
too.
We might be going with one of the co-hosts on the show. So, yeah, pretty stinking stoked about that. That's about all I'm part about this week, though.
Have fun with that, losers.
You know?
I'll be too busy kissing girls.
Right. Well, tell me what's got you fired up then, sir.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Literally, guys.
Moving on.
Yeah.
All right.
You know what? If I got to make myself be excited about something, we'll pour some out for our homies who are no longer with us. I was listening to the Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 by the Beastie Boys on my way here. It's been just over a year since we lost MCA.
Yeah.
So I want to give you this, because I don't think I've ever talked about it on the show before. And as a promotion for their most recent and now probably last album, the Beastie Boys released a short film that's about 20 minutes long called Fight for Your Right Revisited, in which their 80s personas are played by Danny McBride, Seth Rogen, and Elijah Wood.
Oh, I gotta see it.
Performing. Wow. It's a long-form music video for the single off of their Hot Sauce Committee Part 2, Make Some Noise. And it's a lot of fun, and they have a showdown with the Beastie Boys from the future, which are not played by the actual Beastie Boys either. The Beastie Boys show up as a cop to arrest everybody, as cops to arrest everybody at the end, all of Monty Python. It's a lot of fun. So, in closing, I'll leave you with some words of wisdom that I think hip-hop can always use and remember from a little song that they did off Ill Communication. It's the MCA line, since he's no longer with us, from the song Sure Shot. I want to say a little something that's long overdue. Disrespect to women has got to be through. To all the mothers and sisters and wives and friends, I want to offer my love and respect to the end. Done. Get out of here. I'm done. I'm done talking.
Very good. Thank you, well, Dalton.
That'll segue perfectly to me, because, you know, there's a Beastie Boys documentary or related property on the Criterion Collection.
Oh, really?
And you know what? at Barnes & Noble. Criterion Collection is 50% off right now until December 2nd. Barnes & Noble just start sending those Criterion my way.
I mean, they pay you, the Criterion, they call you up, Arthur, and they're like, hey.
I have looked and I have searched on how to get a job at Criterion, and there must be like a magical way because I can't find anything. Secondly, I was going to mention Thor as well. I saw it. And you know what? Entertainment Weekly put it best. It is the perfect formula of a superhero movie, but it's just that. It is just a superhero movie.
That's fair.
But you know what? I did like a little more than the first, personally. Regardless, you know what? The Marvel fans will go watch it.
I just gotta ask, why is it that the anti-hero / villain has the better arc in both movies? Both movies, he's more interesting.
Villains are better than right, I think.
I mean, like, Thor just gets less humble. Or more humble, sorry.
Yeah. Loki. And Tom Hiddleston stole the show in all the movies he's been in with the Avengers.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, guys. Big Macs aren't good for you. They're not nourishing. Sometimes it's fun to have a little piece of mass-produced deliciousness.
But the last thing, that I am fired up about is a little movie called All Is Lost, starring Robert Redford, playing Limited at AMC Quail Screen.
Oh, that looks like a downer.
I gotta see it.
Directed by J.C. Chandler, who made the critically acclaimed Margin Call a couple years back.
I didn't see that.
Now, All Is Lost has just opened to great reviews. It's at 94-95% on Rotten Tomato. I hear it's phenomenal. Robert Redford just kills it. And so I definitely would like to check that out before it's out of its release. I know it's already playing this week, and I know it's still playing starting tomorrow. So you can go check that out if you get a chance.
Excellent. I've got two quick things that got me fired up. Obviously, the Pearl Jam concert that I'm going to be going
to.
I'm excited about getting to see that show. I'm also excited about a little show on Hulu I've been catching lately called Forget About It. It's like Goodfellas. It's like what happened to Ray Liotta's character.
At the end.
At the end, if he goes to Canada. I've seen about 3 episodes of it. It's raunchy. It's really kind of that Family Guy, maybe, and then some.
Archer kind of.
Archer level sort of comedy. But I have laughed so much and have wanted to go back and revisit Goodfellas and go back and revisit Casino and go back and revisit Raging Bull and the Godfather movies and everything. Because it's all up in that wheelhouse of this little section of movies that I just really love. And it's really funny. And it's good time. Quite inappropriate. Don't watch it with the kiddies.
And the title of that one more time?
Is Forget About It.
Forget About It.
Forget About It.
Forget About It.
You know, it's phonetically Italian-American racistly spelled. Gotcha. And so there you have it.
Forget About It.
You know what?
Whoa. It's not racist. It's xenophobic. Get your terms right.
Forget About It.
Well, guys, that's a lot of great stuff to be fired up about, a lot of great stuff that we've talked about on the show. Dear listener, we want you to tell us what you think about what we said, what we got wrong, what we got right, how we're out of our minds, how we are brilliant, and everything in between. Who are your favorite actors' body parts that you like to see on the screen?
And if you say Michael Fassbender's dong, well...
God, I should have said that.
Fassbender.
There you have it. We would love to hear... more about that. Yeah, we really should have thought about a different name for that game.
Celebrity body parts.
But we want to keep the conversation going with you on Facebook, on Twitter, on the Tumblr. Also, individually, we're on the Facey Facebook, we're on the Twitter, and we have Twitter handles. Dalton, go. Tell them yours.
You can find me on Twitter at @Dal_stew, as in a hearty soup-like dish made out of plastic things you give your children.
Arthur Gordon, where are you at?
You can find me at @RNDTBLReview, as in roundtable review.
Caleb.
At Big Cal Kenobi, BigCalKenobi 91. Follow me there. Or read more of my work at themoredaily.com or mastersfilmreview.wordpress.com.
All right. And I am located at Dustin_Sells, S-E-L-S, also at iProtein.tumblr.com. And would love to keep the conversation going with you there in either one of those places. But gang, you know what? We got to keep the conversation going. We got to talk a little bit of dread over the week. Maybe talk a little bit of anticipation about our next film, which happens to be a little bit of James Bond. We're going to watch Skyfall, which was maybe the one opportunity that Bond had to win an Oscar and did not do so because the Academy's stupid.
Screw you, Academy. Roger Deakins needs to get his freaking Oscar. Okay.
Well, hold on. Wait.
Sam Mendes.
Did Adele not get her Oscar?
She did.
She got one. No. Roger Deakins, like one of the greatest cinematographers working in Hollywood of our generation.
So we're going to look at that movie. We're going to do some analysis. Probably going to talk some Bond trivia. Do you guys like Bond? I bet you do.
Yeah.
We'd like to hear about it. And we keep the conversation going until next time. We'll see you then.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
Every song,
so I'll be going to
flannel. Yeah.
Indeed.
Interrupt Dustin. Dalton and I are going to sing, even if it's made up. That was my Creed impersonation.
Jeremy,
you want to hear my
Nickelback? Shot himself in class today. Nirvana is a better band.
Oh my word!